Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, a cancer survivor who's beating the odds and raising a lot of money.
It does give me a sense of, you know, something that I can control and something that I can plan out and do when I want. And I guess trying to get back to, you know, the competitive place I was before I got sick, I think it also gives me something to focus on. I think that's probably a very, very big part of it is, you know, focusing on my training and how I'm doing and where I'm going to race next. And, you know, John and I travel all over the world to go to different races. And I think it's a great distraction and it gives us both something to focus on instead of how I'm doing and, you know, when the next CT scan is going to be coming up and what kind of news that could bring.
How sleep affects performance.
The amount of sleep that you get while you're actually training is absolutely crucial to have the best kind of run times that you can get. With increased sleep times, and not the opposite where we're sleep deprived or reduced, it's shown improved reaction time, enhanced sprint times, fewer mental errors, and an overall kind of peak performance. So really, we should be looking somewhere between 7 to 9 hours is what a lot of research has shown now to be optimal for peak performance.
And bringing a Boston Marathon champion to Vancouver.
He runs for the love of the sport, and he also likes to entertain people. I mean, if you look at some of his other like world records, you know, from, you know, being the fastest person to run in a business suit, and he ran for fun in a panda uniform. I mean, he sees the art of running as a form of entertainment, and I think it's just so great. And I think that, you know, the fact that he is somebody that works full time, works for the government, basically, that so he touches a much broader audience of runners, not just the elite.
On this edition of iRun Radio, we'll talk to the remarkable Cindy Hooper, a runner and triathlete who's a survivor of pancreatic cancer. Also, how important is sleep to your performance in both life and in running? We'll have some tips for you on getting a good night's rest on a regular basis. And Yuki Kawauchi is no ordinary elite runner. We'll tell you more about the Japanese Boston Marathon champion who will be running in Vancouver this spring. Let's get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
Good to talk to you. We've got Valentine's Day coming up. We have the topic of sleep on our show today. We're going to be talking about Yuki Kawauchi, who's coming to Vancouver. And we should talk about the fact that you tried a little experiment in January. How did it go, your dry January?
Well, I, as a marathon runner and as a runner, one thing I'm able to do is stick to goals.
Good
so
for you.
Yes, I will say that I succeeded. I did 31 days with nary a beer, nary a sip of wine, nothing impure touched these lips. And it was good. You know, the problem with these things, though, with these sort of, I wouldn't call it a fad diet, but any sort of trendy little disruptive behavioral modification that you make, you know, so then February 2nd comes and, you know, not that I ever had a problem, but I'm sort of like right back to where I
sure.
was and not sure exactly, like, in hindsight what I learned. Like, you know, I don't know. I've already learned that I can do basically anything for any amount of time. So I just did one more thing, but I'm not sure, like, the lasting long-term benefits, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, if it's something you really want to keep doing, then that's a different story. But if it's not, then you did it and now you're not anymore, right?
Yeah.
It's not like running where you, it's not like, oh, I ran every day in January. Now I never have to do that again, right?
Right.
So,
I'd like to read something about what's supposed to happen next. I feel like I've come back into my, you know, I'm meeting my group on later today, and, you know, I'll have a beer again with my, you know, the post long run workout. So not that was ever a problem in the first place, but, you know, I've come out the other side and sort of said, so what?
Except that you did it, right? So you ticked that box. That's okay.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I guess when I come into the pearly gates and my road is finally completed, and somebody asked me, hey, remember back in 2019, did you do that thing? And I'll say, yep, I did it. It's like, okay, come on in then. You're here's your seat.
Well, I did it too. But, every January is dry January for me, and every February is dry February just because I don't drink. But, you know, so.
Is there a story behind that? Is there anything you could share?
No.
Have you ever, or you just never had a
I've had some. I've had some drinks over the years, but I've just never gotten into it, and it never appealed to me that much. And if it ever did, I probably couldn't afford it at the time. And so. It just never became a thing with me. And then at a certain point, it's like, at a certain point it became, you know what? I like getting my calories from somewhere else, you know? So I'm more likely to eat, three or four chocolate chip cookies or a piece of cheesecake or some apple pie than get my calories from a couple of glasses of wine or beer. So,
yeah. Well, okay.
That's where I'm at. So we're going to, speaking of our health and our well-being and our bodies and everything, we're going to be talking about sleep on this edition of the podcast. And this is good for everybody, not just runners, but, you know, it's such a challenge in our day and age to get the right amount of sleep. There are so many distractions. I think of a time, and I know there have always been challenges and people have always had to work hard but there was a time when I don't think they tried so hard to get sleep because it was so dark and life was so boring after the sun went down that, you know, what else were you going to do except go to sleep, right?
Yeah, that's very funny. That's just very much like one of these modern problems that if somebody were to look at us from whatever it is, 200 years ago, or whatever, you know, that's a thing because you used to run around all day and work and club dinosaurs for dinner and things. So by the time you finished all of that, you were lucky enough to rub some sticks together and get a little light to cook your meal. You were pretty much out, and you kind of didn't need a white noise machine and a specialist and all of these different things. So it goes.
And a mask to put over your eyes to make sure it was dark enough. Anyway, we're going to talk about that coming up. The very inspiring story of Cindy Hooper as well. And Yuki Kawauchi, this incredible marathon runner who won Boston last year and, is unlike any other elite marathon runner in the world right now. So we're going to talk a little bit about his story. Ben, great to chat with you as always. We'll talk to you next week.
I appreciate your time, my friend.
Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up, cancer survivor Cindy Hooper. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. We've spoken many times before with Cindy Hooper, the inspiring runner and triathlete who has beaten the odds after being diagnosed several years ago with pancreatic cancer. Cindy has continued to race throughout her cancer treatment. She's also raised a lot of money for cancer research, and she was recently honored in Ottawa with the Spirit of Sport Award. Cindy, it's great to welcome you back to iRun Radio. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And first of all, before we talk about this very special honor that you're receiving, how are you doing lately?
I've been doing pretty well. So I have no evidence of disease, which is fantastic. My last CT scan showed a little bit of dilatation in my pancreatic duct, but nobody really knows what's causing that. So we're just not worrying about it too much. And generally, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm still able to swim, bike, and run, you know, as much as I want. And overall, feeling pretty well.
Well, that's great news. Yeah. And it's almost 6 years now since your original diagnosis, right?
It is 6 years and almost a month.
Okay. And given, you know, we all know the stats about pancreatic cancer, that you've already defied the odds in a lot of ways, right?
Absolutely. The 5-year survival rate is only 8%.
8%. Wow.
Yeah. It's the lowest of all the major cancers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on top of that, here you are being an athlete and being a very good athlete and raising all kinds of money for research and leading other people to do so as well. So It's no surprise to me that you're getting an award. Tell me about this honor, the Spirit of Sport Award at the Ottawa Sports Awards.
Well, it's an award that's given out annually. I think this is about the fourth or fifth year that they've had this particular award. The Ottawa Sports Awards have been going on for, I think, about 16 years. But this award is relatively new, and it's given out to, recognize somebody that is involved in sport and inspires other people to also get involved in sport. And the really nice thing about it for me is that the award is being given out by Martin Cleary. So that's going to be quite an honor just to get to meet him. I have never met him.
Okay. For those people who don't know, Martin Cleary was a longtime sports writer for the Ottawa Citizen who covered amateur sports and really gave a voice and a platform to the stories of amateur athletes. Really remarkable guy.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah, so he'll be presenting the award, which is great. So let's go back over your story a little bit, Cindy, because what was it that compelled you to keep training and competing and participating in events and running and doing triathlons even after you got this diagnosis?
Well, swimming, biking, and running is really what I absolutely love to do. You know, everybody has their pastimes, the things that they love, whether it's, you know, gardening or walking or whatever. And for me, it's swimming, biking, and running. I just, I really, really love doing those three sports. And the wonderful thing for me is that I'm able to do, swimming and biking with my husband, John. So we do most of our training together, and we have an incredible network of friends that we train with. So it really has become, you know, a lifestyle for us. And we're very fortunate to be able to spend a lot of time with our friends that also enjoy these three sports. And also, I guess, the reason that I've formed these running teams, this will be my fifth year forming a running team for Ottawa Race Weekend. Well, first of all, I really think that Ottawa Race Weekend is a fantastic race. We're really lucky to have a race of this caliber here in Ottawa. So I personally really enjoy the race, the size of it, the competitiveness. It's really good. The volunteers, the race director is amazing. And my husband, John, is the medical director. So I have a very, very big tie to Ottawa Race
sure.
Weekend.
Yeah.
And so this will be the fifth year that I'm organizing a team of family, friends, and colleagues to either walk or run one of the events at Ottawa Race Weekend and help me to get my story out into the media to raise hope for people that are newly diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and to also raise awareness of pancreatic cancer and to raise money for the Ottawa Hospital. We are raising money for Dr. John Bell's oncolytic virus research that's being done at the general campus of the Ottawa Hospital. And so I guess that's, you know, the main reason that I've tried to get other people involved is just to, as I said, help get my story out there and to help me raise money for the hospital.
And you've recruited so many people. Can you put some numbers to how many people you've brought in to participate in Ottawa Race Weekend and raise money and how much money you've actually gathered?
So the four teams that we've already done had close to 400 walkers and runners on those teams, and we raised almost $200,000 for the hospital. So
wow.
We're hoping to bump up over that mark this year.
That's amazing. And for those people mm-hmm. who don't know, Dr. John Bell is doing this world-leading research that's about viruses that could fight cancer, that could take on cancer cells but leave healthy cells safe. And so there's some great work being done on that, trials that are happening and so on. So that's really important that they get the support they need to carry out that research.
absolutely right, Mark.
Yeah. All right. So what about your own, you know, what running has come to mean to you and the triathlons that you do as well in terms of not only staying in shape and staying healthy and feeling like you're battling what you've had to battle, but also still owning part of your life. Not, I get the sense it was one of the ways that you were able to kind of claim part of your time and not have everything be focused on the fact that you were recovering from cancer.
Yeah, that's true. That's I guess that is a huge part of it. You know, having cancer, going through the treatments, and even now, I mean, my body is certainly not the same as it used to be. I'm not able to swim, bike, or run as quick as I used to, unfortunately. But, you know, I'm still pretty competitive, and I enjoy that competitive spirit. And you're right, it does give me a sense of, you know, something that I can control and something that I can plan out and do when I want. And I guess trying to get back to, you know, the competitive place I was before I got sick, I think it also gives me something to focus on. I think that's probably a very, very big part of it is, you know, focusing on my training and how I'm doing and where I'm going to race next. And, you know, John and I travel all over the world to go to different races. And I think it's a great distraction and it gives us both something to focus on instead of how I'm doing and, you know, when the next CT scan is going to be coming up and what kind of news that could bring. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're right about the control over my own body. But I think even more so, it's probably the distraction that it gives me to focus on something different.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there a moment that stands out for you, a race that you did or a run that you went on or anything like that that sort of stands out for you as a statement you were able to make or an emotional moment, something like that?
Oh, well, that would have to be when John and I finished Ironman Canada together when I was still on chemotherapy, right? I mean, that was really just unbelievable that I was able to even accomplish that. You know, when I think back on it, well, I mean, I guess I was pretty realistic. I was going to say, I can't even believe I attempted that. But we were pretty realistic when we headed out to Whistler. I was between my 15th and 16th round of chemotherapy of 18. So, you know, my body was pretty beat down by then. And we really didn't have a good expectation that I was going to be able to complete the entire Ironman event. So we went out there just thinking, hey, you know what? It'll be great to participate in the swim. And, you know, maybe do half the bike course. I was already registered for the race. I had already paid a substantial amount of money. So it was going to be great to just go out there, make the trip out to Whistler. I'd never been there and at least be a part of it. You know, that was the biggest thing for me, was just to be a part of it. And the fact that my traveling out there, even just to attempt to do it, raised so much media attention, you know, right across Canada, that we were able to raise quite a bit of money just through that venture. So it would have to be that race, the fact that you know, I had the desire to even train for it while I was going through chemotherapy, and then, you know, the fact that we made the trip out to such a beautiful place and then managed to complete the whole thing.
Yeah.
That was pretty incredible.
It was incredible. And that was within months, really, of your diagnosis, right?
8 months after my surgery.
Well, Cindy, it's your story is so inspiring every time you tell it, and I know you've had an impact on so many people, and so you're very deserving of this Spirit of Sport Award at the Ottawa Sports Awards. Congratulations again, and thank you very much for being with us on the show.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me.
That's cancer survivor and fundraiser Cindy Hooper. Coming up next, how important is sleep in running and in life? iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Welcome back to iRun Radio. iRun Radio is on the air every Sunday morning on 1310 News in Ottawa. And you can also listen to the podcast and check out past editions of the show at iRun.ca. Just click on radio. As runners, we focus so much on our workouts that sometimes we forget that one of the most important things we can do is simply to rest. Andrew Holmes is a sleep consultant with Sleep Efficiency in Ottawa. He's worked with many athletes, including members of the Ottawa Senators hockey team, and he's going to be the guest editor of a special issue of iRun coming out this spring that's going to focus on sleep and performance. Andrew, welcome to iRun Radio.
Thank you for having me today.
And I'm very excited to see this issue that's going to come out in the spring that is going to be focused on sleep that you will be playing a leadership role in. So thank you for doing that as well. And let's talk about sleep, something that, it's important to everyone, but I'm not sure how much of a priority we're able to make it because there are so many things that are interfering with our sleep, especially in this day and age, right? I think back to 100 years ago or 200 years ago when it got dark at night and there was nothing to do. There wasn't television. There weren't iPads. There weren't devices buzzing and all of that kind of thing. So I imagine back then it was easier to get a good night's sleep in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Fewer distraction back then. Now we live in a world where we constantly have an itch in our pocket from our phone buzzing. We're never really truly detached from our environment, from our workplace environment. You know, emails now will buzz, and 10 o'clock at night, I'll find even myself sometimes, maybe I should be replying to that. We're in this on-demand kind of world that we live in, and it's really having an impact on our sleep overall. We really should be looking to make some adjustments and allocate specific time so that we're not really in a situation where we're controlled by our devices. We're reducing screen time. There's been lots of talk about that now on, reducing the amount of screen time that we have in general, but also not exposing yourself to blue light a couple hours before you go to bed, because it delays the release of melatonin, which is a sleep-inducing hormone. So, once upon a time, the person who worked all night long was looked upon as kind of the hero. Oh, I only got 2 hours or 3 hours of sleep last night, but look how much I was able to accomplish. We kind of have to remove that stigma now where, the person who gets 7 or 8 or 9 hours would have been much more productive and actually probably produced a much better end product,
right,
depending on what that was.
So let's talk about it in the context of performance, physical performance, including running. How much of a factor is it? If we're not sleeping enough, how much is that impacting how fast and how well we're able to run?
Good question. So it can impact us in a variety of different ways. When we go to sleep at night, we go through what we call a sleep cycle, which takes approximately 90 minutes. And one of the stages of sleep that we actually acquire in that 90-minute cycle is something called slow wave sleep. And that's when our body really restores itself. Physical restoration takes place. Growth hormone is released. Bone, muscle, and tissue regeneration start to occur. And that's something that our body really, really needs in order to be able to handle what the next day is going to entail for us. So, it's a big piece of our recovery. And if you're preparing to actually enter races and things like that, the amount of sleep that you get while you're actually training is absolutely crucial to have the best kind of run times that you can get. With increased sleep times, and not the opposite where we're sleep deprived or reduced, where we have actually increased the amount of hours we sleep, it's shown improved reaction time, enhanced sprint times, fewer mental errors, and an overall kind of peak performance. So really, we should be looking somewhere between 7 to 9 hours is what a lot of research has shown now to be optimal for peak performance. So we can have our physical health, our emotional health, and our mental health, which all kind of ties together.
And that, of course, means 7 to 9 hours all the time. This is not, you can't cram for this exam, right? This is not like, okay, I've got a half marathon on Sunday, so this week I'm going to really focus on getting some sleep. You have to be doing it the whole time leading up, right?
For sure. Yeah. It's not, like you said, you can't just kind of cram at the end of this. This is something that it's almost like a lifestyle that you want to promote here. And it's going to bed at the same time and getting up at the same time. There's been lots of studies done on sleep hygiene now and how that impacts our sleep. So it's not just the amount of sleep that we're getting. It's what are we doing throughout the daytime to make sure that we get quality sleep at night? Everything from you know, while exercise is great and running is great, you don't want to do that too close to your bedtime as well. Maybe a couple hours of before is when you really want to shut it down. Everything from limiting to caffeine intake, you know, don't have any caffeinated products after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because that can really impact what we call your sleep onset latency, and it's your ability to fall asleep at nighttime. And caffeine actually interferes with your sleep cycles, which I just briefly touched on as well. It kind of reduces the amount of time you may be spending in each stage of sleep. So again, when we're sitting in these sleep cycles throughout the course of the night, if we're going to bed at the same time and getting up at the same time, our body gets used to bringing us out of a lighter stage of sleep where now we're waking up, and then we can actually start our day rather quickly. You know, we get a quick cup of coffee going. But if you're going to bed at one night, let's say at 11 o'clock at night, and then you're going to bed at 1 o'clock the next night, and then you're exhausted, so you go to bed at 9, you're not going to have optimal sleep. Your body's going to be very confused, and you might be actually waking up in the morning out of a deep stage of sleep, which is our restorative sleep, which is our slow wave. And it can cause what we call sleep inertia, which is kind of a sleep grogginess or a drunkenness. And it could really take a couple of hours to get going before we really actually feel like we've got the hamster on the wheel and we're sharp cognitively. Also, REM sleep is a big piece that's responsible for our cognitive restoration, how we process information. Memory consolidation takes place during this time as well. And just like when we're kids, we crave routine, our bodies crave routine when we're older as well. And sleep is no exception to that.
So that's a really important point. I know lots of people who maintain one schedule during the week when they got to get the kids off to school and get off to work themselves, and then a different schedule on the weekends. And you're saying that's not conducive to the best quality of sleep. So if you're going to bed at 9:30 or 10 o'clock and getting up at 6 or 6:30 on weekdays, you should try to do something similar to that on the weekends.
Correct. I think what we can do is we can give ourselves a bit of a leeway on either end, maybe an hour and a half. You know, everybody likes to relax on a Friday night, maybe sleep in a little bit. I'm not saying you need to be militant with this. It's you give yourself a bit of a buffer, but if you're one of those people that'll stay up till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning and then sleep until 11, what you're going to do is you're going to prevent the ability to fall asleep on Sunday night, and then what you've done is really create something called a sleep debt. And that kind of can build itself over the course of the weekend. And now it's Sunday evening and we're trying to go to sleep, but because we've slept in all weekend, our body's not ready to go to sleep at the regular time, let's say at 10 o'clock. You're kind of shortchanging yourself for Monday morning. And now all of a sudden we've started a brand new week where we're trying to get, our busiest day. We're trying to get back on the horse, and we're really starting our day off on the wrong foot, sleep deprived, essentially, because of the sleep debt that occurs by shuffling it too much.
Right.
So the message here should be maybe just an hour or so, maybe an hour and a half on either end.
And what about napping? Because I've, at times during my career, I've had to get up very early in the morning for work. And I know some people who do that have naps in the afternoon. They swear by that. For me, I always found that if I had a nap in the afternoon, it would make me groggy. I never felt I got good quality sleep, and then it would make it harder for me to fall asleep at night. But I know everyone's different.
Everybody is different. Everybody has a kind of a different output that they present throughout the course of the day. So while napping is a great thing, first and foremost, we'll say if you have problems falling asleep at night, you shouldn't be napping at all throughout the daytime. Absolutely not. But naps can be very beneficial. The main kind of piece that we want to look at here is the duration of the nap. I at the hospital I work at and other people I've spoken to, sometimes they'll nap for 2 hours or 3 hours. And it can really be detrimental to your overall quality of sleep. You can't really pay back throughout the daytime, what you lost that particular night. I spoke about briefly about sleep cycles and that 19-minute cycle and how we go through different stages of sleep. When we fall asleep, we're kind of stuck in a transition period initially. We quickly then move into our stage two sleep and then into our slow wave sleep and closing it with a REM period, and that's 19 minutes. When we're napping throughout the daytime, we really want to keep our nap to about 30 minutes maximum, maybe allowing a 10-minute period to fall asleep. Because what will happen is if we sleep any longer than that, our body's actually gotten into a deeper stage of sleep, and it's unable to complete the sleep cycle. I briefly touched on sleep grogginess or sleep inertia, and that's essentially what's happening. Unless you can do a full hour and a half, which is 90 minutes, where you go stage of sleep, that would be optimal for peak performance. Let's say if you're getting ready for a race or something like that as it pertains to running. But if you don't have the ability, I definitely don't have the ability to take an hour and a half nap every day. 20 to 30 minutes is where you really want to cap it. Again, because if we sleep any longer than that and we go over into the 45 minutes or the hour range, you've gone into a deep, slow-wave sleep, and now you're going to wake up feeling worse, as you said, than when you initially laid down.
Any other tips for getting the right amount of sleep and the right quality of sleep and being consistent about that?
Looking at what we're actually sleeping on, this sometimes gets overlooked. There are lots of different sleep hygiene techniques that you can implement. Again, from the foods that we're eating, you know, not having spicy foods before bed, that can cause some indigestion. But, you know, looking at what we're actually sleeping on can go a long way. The mattress that we're sleeping on, the pillow, I often use the analogy, if we're going on a long road trip, we really want to be in a vehicle that's comfortable. We spend about a third of our life, so let's say ballpark 25 years sleeping. That's a lot of time. You really want to make sure that the rest that you're having night after night after night is on a comfortable mattress. A lot of people will hold on to it for 10 years, 12 years. You should really be looking at changing that maybe every 6 to 7 years, depending on what your body and how your body is responding to it. So I think making sure you've got a quality products that you're sleeping on, pillow can go a long way. And there's not kind of one mattress or one pillow kind of fits all. You really need to listen to what your body, you know, if you're coming from an injury or got hip pain, you know, having a product there that's really going to be supportive and waking up feeling refreshed in the morning, because you can kind of put all these good habits into play. But if you've got a poor quality mattress that's causing just pain right off the bat, you're really doing yourself a disservice.
This is all great advice, Andrew. And again, I think it had a big impact on not just the quality of running that our listeners will experience, but also their quality of life. So thank you very much for joining us. And I look forward to seeing this special issue that you'll be playing a big role in coming out sometime in the spring. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Andrew Holmes of Sleep Efficiency in Ottawa. Coming up next, welcoming one of the most intriguing elite marathon runners to Vancouver. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Yuki Kawauchi is not the typical elite runner. The 2018 Boston Marathon champion still has a full-time job, and he runs in many more events than the typical competitive long-distance runner. He's also completed races dressed in a business suit and a panda costume. And this May, he's going to be running in Vancouver. We're joined by Eric Chenet, the director of race operations at the Vancouver Marathon. Eric, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
So tell us the story of how you were able to attract Yuki Kawauchi to Vancouver.
To be honest, it's one of those things. I think we kind of, we always look at, you know, who are some interesting people to bring in year over year. And quite honestly, rarely are we successful because we don't really have the big prize money like some of these other big events. You know, like obviously he just came off of winning Boston Marathon, but I think a lot of us when we saw him win Boston, like what a great story. I mean, we've had such a rich history of actually. Japanese champions for our event, and you know, talking to locals here, talking to some of our tour operators, like, wouldn't it be great to bring in Yuki? So basically we sent out an invitation out in September. We had a connection through a local group here, and really what it came down to, I think we got, you know, a combination of a little bit lucky, if you will. It's really based on his race schedule. I mean, I know we're only 3 weeks after Boston, but you know, if you look at Mr. Kawauchi's running schedule, I mean, he runs, you know, 12 half marathons and 12 marathons a year almost every year. So for him, it's all about timing. And he's also always wanted to run an event in Canada. He's never run, will be the first event that he runs in Canada. So in terms of timing, location, I think we really kind of ticked a lot of boxes for him. And conversation went from there in September to by December. We had him confirmed coming to our race. So our lead coordinator was just so excited to be able to bring somebody like Mr. Kohachi into to our race.
Yeah, and look, his story is amazing. He's the Boston Marathon champion, as you mentioned, but he also has quite a different profile from the typical elite runner. He has a full-time job. As you mentioned, he runs many marathons and half marathons every year, and that's not typical of elite runners. So he's a pretty special guy, isn't he?
Well, I think that's just it. I mean, it's more about just having fast times. And I mean, I think, you know, I've read so many articles, you know, in the last year on him. And, you know, he loves running. You know, he's done it, you know, until now, I've heard. I mean, he hasn't said anything to us. But, you know, he might look at becoming a professional runner. But, I mean, this is a guy that basically held a full-time job 40 hours a week, and he would run once a week. And it almost looks like he ran an event every other weekend, whether it be a half marathon, marathon. But I think what I really liked about him as well, like he runs for the love of the sport, and he also likes to entertain people. I mean, if you look at some of his other like world records, you know, from you know being the fastest person to run in a business suit, and I know he ran for fun in a panda uniform. I mean, he sees the art of running as a form of entertainment, and I think it's just so great. And I think that you know the fact that he is somebody that works full time, works for the government, basically that. You know, he really touches sort of that weekend warrior and those types of people as well. So he touches a much broader audience of runners, not just the elite. I mean, it's something that, you know, obviously very few people ever run a sub 220, and I think he's done it over 80 times now, which is just remarkable.
Yeah, I think he's trying to do it 100 times in his career, I think, which, again, you know, some elite marathon runners only run 15 marathons in their lives.
Exactly. I think that's just it, right? I mean, he brings it on from the runners. You know, we've had a few runners at our races that have ran over 150 marathons and such a big accomplishment to run 100, but he's looking at running like 100 under 220, which is just remarkable. And to be honest, when we first reached out to him, like we thought, you know what, even if he runs a half marathon and so on, we would have been very happy with that. But he's like, no, I'm going to come and run the marathon. And, you know, he's pretty clear. He's coming to win.
Very cool.
And, you know, look and chase after our course record. So it's just, you know, just speaks to his determination and how, you know, no matter the race, he's always there to have a time. He's not there to just be a participant. He's always, you know, racing to win, if you will. So,
yeah, very cool. And the way you described it, I think it puts him in a place on the spectrum where he's very relatable to the other people who are participating in the marathon. Even though he's a Boston Marathon champion and he's a guy who can run under 220, the fact that he runs so much, participates in so many races, has done these quirky things like running a marathon in a business suit, and has a full-time job and you know, doesn't accept sponsorship money. It sort of puts him, you know, I think it feels a little bit like he's one of us, even if he's super fast.
Exactly. I think as soon as we started communicating with Mr. Kohachi and his agent, I mean, he's very humble. Like, you know, he's not someone that was asking, you know, obviously whenever we bring in elites, we cover, you know, part of the airfare and accommodation. He's like, oh, no, just treat me like anyone else. Like, we fly, you know, everyone on coach. He's not looking for a first-class treatment, right? He's a very humble and modest person. He's just very grateful that, you know, the sport of running, I think, brought him to where he is today. So I think that was, you know, for us, it's just really speaks to the type of person we want at our events. And it's just, you know, it was never about, you know, whether or not, like, once we got into it, it was like, how many days is he going to stay? You know, I think he, you know, such an interesting person as well. Like, he's looking at running parts of the course before our race day. So that's the other piece, you know, most runners will not be looking at doing that, but he wants to see exactly what he's going to be in for on race day. So, like, he's going to come in a couple of days early, you know, race parts of the first half of the marathon course and the second half of the marathon course, just to get a feel for the hills and things like that. Because our course is, you know, probably the most picturesque course you can get in North America, if not the world. But it is a challenging course. I mean, Vancouver's topography, I mean, you know, we've got a lot of uphills and downhills. So it's not an easy course to run a fast time on.
Yeah, tell me more about the Vancouver course, because I was in Vancouver a few weeks ago and I ran a part of the course. I ran along the seawall in Stanley Park across from downtown Vancouver. And I looked at the course afterwards, and I think I ran on part of the course for that stretch. So it's really an amazing setting to be running. There's a path that goes right along the water there, and you go through downtown Vancouver as well. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly an amazing course, both our half marathon and marathon course. I mean, to be honest, we're just so lucky. Anyone that lives in Vancouver, I mean, I moved here back in 2008, and every time I go out, you know, I was actually out this weekend. We have another event coming up called the First Half, and I bike that course with our bike team, and it's just such amazing views. So basically, the marathon course starts at QE Park, which is the highest point in the city, and then takes you through, you know, Endowment Land, which is a nice forested area with some, you know, fairly steep climbs in that area. But then you get some amazing views up at UBC coming down Spanish Banks, where you get basically, you know, a whole shot of the North Vancouver Mountains. And then, like you said, once you get over Broad Bridge, you come into the seawall, which is our flattest section of the course. And again, you're basically running along water for 10 kilometers. And then you get right into the core of our business and financial section in Vancouver in Cole Harbour, where we finish, and have a lot of enthusiastic fans, you know, cheering on those runners in that last, you know, kilometer or so after running through the seawall. So it's an amazing course. It's very beautiful. I mean, it really highlights the city. And I really think that's where we've seen a lot of growth in our event in recent years. Last year, setting an event record with over 17,000 people registering across the series of events we have. But we've really seen the growth in destination runners. I think the city offers such an amazing backdrop, both while you're running the course, but also post-event as well. And we've, you know, had a lot of different partners come to the table of late. And, you know, we've had over 3,500 participants register that are from different markets around the world, with over, 65 countries that compete.
Wow. And the marathon's been growing, because I know it's one of the largest in the country. I think some years it's even been the largest, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, last year we actually took over that honor again. It's usually between, I know, ourselves, Toronto, and Ottawa. I mean, all three events are great events, to be honest. I've been lucky enough to go to Toronto twice. I've been to Ottawa once. We're very lucky. And I think, it speaks a lot to the city of Vancouver in terms of a running destination. Just before our event, we have the biggest 10K in North America. Running is just part of Vancouver. And I think what we're seeing more and more is, like I mentioned, there is a lot of people from international markets, but you even see quite a few people from Alberta, Ontario, and all those other markets. They just want to come and see this beautiful city that we get to run in every day. And we've, to be honest, we've had this amazing winter right now where, today is 10 degrees Celsius. So feel very, very fortunate. I know there's a bit of a cold front out east where you are. So,
to say the least.
I mean, I was outside yesterday. I went from downhill skiing to biking on the same day. So just very fortunate to have that type of a climate out here.
Yeah. Well, don't rub it in, please. We've had some frigid temperatures here recently, but that's okay. That's Vancouver. We know it. Well, listen, Eric, it's great to talk to you. And I think it's a great coup for you to get this guy, to be part of your event, who is not only a Boston champion, but such a great story and inspiring figure. So congratulations on that, and good luck with the planning for this year's Vancouver Marathon. Thanks for being with us.
Sounds good. Well, thanks again for your time.
That's Eric Chenet of the Vancouver Marathon. Coming up in the weeks ahead on iRun Radio, legendary running coach Greg McMillan and Canadian Olympian Natasha Wodak. I hope you can join us next week on iRun Radio. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.